Hello everybody and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford District Talking Newspaper. We're reading articles from the Wallingford Herald published on Wednesday, April the 15th, 2026. The three readers this evening are Alec and Pat Hayton and Jane Poulter. The copy is Roger Scammell and the producer's myself, Lawrence. In addition to the Herald articles, we'll also be including some choice articles from the monthly magazines, which will appear at the end of the recording.
Hello, this is Alec. Rare Tolkien book selling for £65,000 in an antique shop. A bookseller who is selling an incredibly rare book by J.R.R. Tolkien for £65,000 in his shop, said he was trembling to discover the edition. Songs for the Philologist is the rarest book by the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit author, with just 15 copies thought to be in existence. One of them is now sitting safely in Tom Ayling's antique shop in Howbury Park, Wallingford, bringing the book to the market for the first time since 2014. Mr. Ayling said, "When it arrived, I couldn't believe it. I was finally holding a copy of this rarity in my hands. I trembled a little picking it up. I know it might be the only copy I will ever handle, so it is a privilege that my rare bookshop can offer it for sale to our worldwide client base of Tolkien collectors." Mr. Ayling is an antiquarian bookseller who specialises in the work of Tolkien, who wrote much of his work while living in North Oxford. Songs for the Philologist contains 13 poems by the author, written while he worked at Leeds University with E.V. Gordon in the 1920s. Typewritten copies of the verse were given to students at University College London in the 1930s, to print on their Elizabethan press as an exercise by Dr. Smith. However, when Dr. Smith realised he hadn't asked Tolkien's permission to reproduce the poems, he didn't distribute them, and many of the poems left in the printing room were later destroyed by a fire. It is thought that just 15 copies survive. 12 are owned by institutional collections in the UK and the US, leaving vanishingly rare opportunities for collectors to get their hands on one. The last copy to come up for auction was in 2003, and in the 23 years since, only two other copies have publicly come to the market, both in 2014. Mr. Ayling added, "I've been looking for a copy of this for so long that I'd nearly given up on finding one." For Tolkien collectors, the chance to acquire a copy can be once in a generation. And going forward, opportunities will be even fewer as remaining copies enter major collections. The rare book dealer tracked down this copy in Australia 2 weeks ago, where it had been taken there by Professor Arthur Brown, who taught literature at University College London and was a friend and associate of Tolkien. He shared the Oxford professor's interest in Anglo-Saxon and Icelandic literature, and alongside his copy of Songs for the Philologist, probably attained during his tenure at UCL, Professor Brown also owned Tolkien's original illustrated manuscript for Visio de Doest. The first edition was printed privately in 1936 and is bound in the original printed paper wrappers and described as an exceptional copy of a legendary rarity.
Hello, I'm Jane. Worker injured in incident with dumper. A worker has been injured in an incident involving machinery at an Oxfordshire science campus. The worker, whose gender, age or role has not been disclosed, received non-life-threatening injuries on shift at Culham campus on Wednesday, April the 8th. The incident involved a one-ton dumper machine with soft tissue injury to the subcontractor's leg. The Health and Safety Executive, HSE, is also aware of the incident and is making inquiries. Cullum Campus at Clifton Hampden near Abingdon is a UK Atomic Energy Authority's research institution for sustainable fusion energy to maximise scientific and UK economic benefit. The Cullum Campus, owned and managed by the UK AEA, hosts between 2,500 and 3,000 people working in fusion research and related technologies. A spokesman for the UK AEA said, "An incident involving machinery occurred at Cullum Campus on the 8th of April, in which a subcontractor received non-life-threatening injuries. Emergency services attended, and the person involved is receiving treatment." UK AEA's number one golden rule for site is work safely at all times, and our thoughts are with the injured person. The incident is being investigated, and it would not be appropriate to comment further while the investigation is underway.
Hello, this is Pat. Steam Railway has a busy start to the month, and this little article is accompanied by some smiling people standing next door to a steam train. Hundreds of visitors enjoying spring sunshine at Didcot Railway Centre. There were steam days across the Easter weekend, giving people a chance to ride on trains at the Heritage Centre next to Didcot Parkway Railway Station. The next steam days are on Saturday, April the 18th, and Saturday, April the 25th. A spokesman for the centre said, "Steam trains will be operating on at least one of the centre's two demonstration lines, allowing you to take unlimited rides. On many steam days, the second line will be running too, and may feature a pioneering diesel rail car, a heritage diesel locomotive, or a small branch line steam engine. Other attractions at the 21-acre centre include a museum, a cafe, a shop, and an engine shed." Jenny Langer was amongst the visitors during the Easter weekend. Her retro outfit, including a coat by Mary Magdalene, a hat by Jane Marple, and a bag by Baby, the Stars Shine Bright. The compartment she travelled in was number 7372, built in 1948, which was part of the Royal Train used by the Queen Mother in the 1960s. Frank Dumbleton, a volunteer at the centre, has been taking photos of visitors with the steam train.
Weekly car boot sale cancelled. An Oxfordshire car boot sale has been cancelled every Saturday until further notice. Oxfordshire Boot Sale and Events Company said its Burcott sale, just off the roundabout at Berinsfield, will not go ahead on the first day of each weekend. Organisers said on social media that the reasons are down to a lack of support at the present and huge expenses and people moaning that it's too small. They added, "Sadly, they forget Abingdon and Witney were that small and had to grow. Our policy has now to be use it or lose it." However, officials confirmed the event would still go ahead each Sunday at the same location, just off the A415 by the roundabout in Berinsfield.
Village Watering Hole wins Pub of the Season title. A village pub near Wallingford has been named in the South Oxfordshire Pub of the Season in Regional Campaign for Real Ale Awards. The district branch of the Camera has awarded the King William IV in Ibston the title. A drinking spot for locals, farmers and visitors from further afield, the rural pub has been run by Emma Wrighton for the past 2.5 years. Miss Wrighton said, "It was quite funny as we were celebrating National Farm Animal Day. We always do a dress-up day on a Friday, so we were all wearing T-shirts with a farm animal on for the award." The farmer-turned-landlady has a close link with the Chiltern farmers, and the establishment bills itself as the pub with the view because of the stunning scenery surrounding it. A spokesperson for South Oxfordshire Camera said, a most enjoyable late afternoon presenting South Oxfordshire Camera's Spring 2026 Pub of the Season Award to Emma Wrighton and her team at the packed King William IV Ibston. Well done to everyone at the pub, which has the best pint of Breakspears beer for miles around. Camera described it as perfect setting to sip down a well-kept pint of Breakspears Gravity, which is always served straight from the cask. The Cross Keys in Wallingford was voted Branch Pub of the Year and Branch Cider Pub of the Year for 2026. And there's a lovely photograph of Emma and her team sitting in the sunshine on the benches outside the King William IV pub.
Animal warning on rural roads after fatal collision. A garage director has issued a warning about the dangers of deer on rural roads following an inquest into a fatal wildlife crash. Motorcyclist Yavo Avu, who lived in Medmenham near Marlow but worked as a delivery driver for Grandon Waste Management in New Elm for more than 13 years, died on October 16th last year. The 63-year-old, who was born in Togo, Africa, was riding his Yamaha FJY1300 motorcycle on the A4130 towards Wallingford to head to work at about 4:50 a.m. on October the 13th. His bike collided with a deer which had jumped out onto the road at Port Hill, Nettlebed, and Mr. Avu was thrown from his bike, causing him fatal injuries. He died 3 days later in the John Radcliffe Hospital, Oxford, on October the 16th. An inquest held at Oxfordshire Coroner's Court on April the 9th established the circumstances around the crash and his deterioration in hospital. In a statement read to the court, Mrs. Avu's widow, Kim Avu, said, "He was a devoted husband, father and grandfather, and respected member of the wider community. His death has had a profound impact on myself, his daughter and grandchildren, and his wider family in Africa." She had the chance to speak with her husband at the scene of the crash, as he remained conscious but immobile, and he had asked other drivers who stopped to help to call his wife. The motorcyclist explained to Mrs. Avu that he had seen the deer at the side of the road for some distance, but it had pulled back again and only jumped out once he was too close to avoid it. The impact of the crash killed the animal and threw Mr. Avu from his bike, with both he and the motorcycle landing on the opposite carriageway some 5 metres away. The court heard a statement from Thames Valley Police which said that the crash was the fault of the sudden and unpredictable movement of a deer on the carriageway, and the coroner established that no fault lay with Mr. Avu. It was concluded that his death was caused by multiple organ failure and polytrauma or injuries after a road traffic collision. Mark Brett, director of Haynes Car Care Centre in Wallingford, urged drivers to stay aware of wildlife on rural roads. He said that deer were one of the most serious hazards to drivers because of their size and unpredictable behaviour. But even smaller animals like birds could cause damage, especially at high speeds or if drivers react suddenly. Mr. Brett said wildlife of all sizes can pose a risk on the road. Staying aware and driving carefully can make all the difference in preventing accidents. The Car Care Drivers Director advised drivers to go slower on rural unlit roads, stay vigilant and avoid swerving where possible, as this could lead to more serious accidents.
New recovery scheme for children affected by domestic abuse. A leading trauma support charity has launched a specialist recovery program for children and families who have experienced domestic abuse. Bounce Back for Kids, BB4K, delivered by Parents and Children Together, known as PACT, is now available in Oxfordshire for children aged 3 to 11 and their non-abusive parent or carer. The programme offers a safe space for children to process their experiences, build emotional resilience, and develop coping strategies through creative and therapeutic activity. A parent who completed the course said, "Doing the bounce back course with my daughter was one of the best things I've done. I was unsure at first as I didn't want to admit that it had affected my girls so much. But I am so happy I did it as it opened my eyes and given me and my daughter the tools to move forward." Sessions include stories, games, and guided discussions led by trained support workers, while parents and carers attend parallel group sessions focused on recovery and relationship building. Catherine Warner, Director of Community Services and Development at PACT, said, "We know there is a postcode lottery for families accessing recovery support following domestic abuse, so we are really pleased that we are now able to accept referrals for all families with children aged 3 to 11 that live in Oxfordshire. In 2025, Thames Valley Police recorded 57,500 reports of domestic abuse, which equates to 157 every day. The BB4K programme also available now in Reading, West Berkshire and Wokingham. More information about the programme is available at the PAC Charity website."
Oil price hike may add to pothole costs. Volatile oil prices since the closure of the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East threaten to increase the cost of pothole repairs in the county. Oxfordshire County Council, the Highways Authority, has spent £9,807,367 on road repairs over the last 3 years. While there is hope that a truce in the Middle East between Israel, US and Iran will hold, there are fears this could push up the already high price tag to fix Oxfordshire's pothole crisis. The closure of the Strait of Hormuz amid the joint Israel-US airstrikes on Iran on February the 28th rocketed crude oil prices by more than 30%, with a barrel peaking above $120, £89, per barrel on March the 2nd. Prices tumbled by almost 14% to around £70 per barrel following Donald Trump's announcement of a two-week Iran ceasefire earlier this week. However, as the agreement was contingent on Iran agreeing to reopen the Straits of Hormuz, concerns are now rising again over the agreement durability after Israel launched a wave of strikes on Lebanon. Crude oil is refined through fractional distillation, which allows for the extraction of different products, including asphalt, which is used to mend potholes. Oxfordshire County Council said it is monitoring the situation closely.
Artisan bakery named in Britain's top 50. An acclaimed artisan bakery has been named among the very best in Britain by the Good Food Guide. The team at Emma the Bakery in Stoke Row near Wallingford are no strangers to awards, but the latest accolade has left them in a little bit of disbelief. Founded by Tonya Eleguin, who started in Mexico as a fine dining chef about 5 years ago, the village bakery produced award-winning loaves, coveted sweet treats and delicious artisanal treats from a warehouse cafe counter in an industrial estate. Now, Emma the Bakery has been named on the Good Food Guide's 50 Best Bakeries 2026 list, sponsored by Square. A statement from the team said, "Oh wow, we're still a little bit in disbelief. Good Food Guide UK has put us on the 50 Best Bakeries 2026 list, sponsored by the Square. For our little bakery in Stoke Row, that feels wild. We are just in shock right now. The Good Food Guide is something we've always trusted and followed ourselves, so to be included really means the world to us. And there's a nice picture of the Emma the Baker lady and some really lovely crusty loaves which look as though they're made from Abingdon rye and seem to cost £4.70 each.
Garden waste makes millions for councils. People living in the south of Oxfordshire have paid more than £16 million to have their garden waste collected since the pandemic. SODC, which last year charged a record £69 for its brown bin services, pocketed just over £9 million from resident subscriptions since 2019-20. Those living in the Vale of White Horse forked out £7.5 million, with the cost of the brown bin being £4 cheaper, despite the close connection of £65. Households in the two districts pay a fee per bin, formerly via an ongoing subscription, but now an annual permit, and it's up to people if they want to pay for more than one bin. The number of garden waste bins sent out in each district has increased year on year. Data gathered by this newspaper under the Freedom of Information Law, in South District, 62,500 bins were paid for in 2019-20, but this has climbed up to over 67,500 by 24-25. In the Vale, this climb was slightly higher, from 58,700 bins from April 2019 to 66,266 last year. But the prices for bins has gone up dramatically in both districts. Garden waste bins in the south have gone up 60% in 6 years, from £43 to £69. And the charges in the Vale have shot up by 51%. Despite this, there's been a huge dip in revenue generated from the garden bins last year from its peak. At its highest in 2023-24, South Oxfordshire received just over £2 million from garden waste. But last year, that fell to just over £1 million. Vale of White Horse pocketed £1.7 million in 2023 and only £919,000 the following year. A spokesman for the two councils explained the decrease in revenue was due to the previous direct debit-based subscription ending in March 2025. Final payments made by subscribers were calculated on a pro rata basis to reflect the early termination of the ongoing service within that financial year. From April 2025, a new permit system was introduced. Under this system, residents make a one-off annual payment for a permit valid until the end of March the next year. As a result, revenue reporting from 2025-26 will reflect this new payment structure. Robert Clegg, Cabinet Minister for Environmental Services at the Vale, said the garden waste permit scheme has been a success, thanks to residents' support. Garden waste collection reduces the amount of waste being thrown away and turns it into nutritious compost. The permit scheme is a fair way of ensuring that those who receive this valuable service are those who contribute towards it. Sam James Loy, SODC's Cabinet Minister, added residents have embraced the new permit scheme.
Council slams park bin fire vandalism. Incidents of vandalism at a park in Wallingford have been condemned by the Town Council after multiple bins were deliberately set on fire. Wallingford Town Council said it is disappointed to report incidents of vandalism in the Bullcroft Park in the centre of the town over the past 3 days. Two bins had been deliberately set alight, leaving behind burnt-out plastic bin bags, rubbish, plastic fittings and ash in the bin fixture attached to the ground. The Town Council said each bin costs more than £200 of taxpayers' money to replace, which it described as money that should be going into improving facilities for everyone, not repairing avoidable damage. A spokesperson for the Council said, with the Easter holidays currently underway and more people out and about enjoying the nice weather, we're asking everyone to be mindful of how our shared spaces are used. The Bullcroft is a valuable space for the whole community, and incidents like this affect everyone who enjoys it. If you witnessed anything suspicious, please report it to Thames Valley Police. Let's all do our bit to look after our town. One of the burned bins is beside the park's tennis court, and the other on the concrete next to the bench just off its main path.
Residents enjoy car museum trip, and this little article is accompanied by people standing in front of a very low sports car which went in for the Le Mans 24-hour race. Car enthusiasts from a care home enjoyed a trip down memory lane at Aston Martin Heritage Trust. Residents and staff from the Oxford Beaumont care community in Boars Hill visited the Wallingford Museum on Thursday, April the 9th. They spent the afternoon exploring the museum's collection, learning about the mechanics and designs, and revisiting the car manufacturer's history. Jokingly, some of the residents picked their favourite vehicles to take back home. The care home said it values community engagement and regularly organises outings to interesting locations. Repairs needed at Agatha Christie's former home. And this article is accompanied by a picture of Agatha Christie at work on her typewriter in her study. The former Oxfordshire home of the world's best-selling novelist is at risk of damage from decay, as plans are submitted for permission to make repairs to the listed building. Winterbrook House near Wallingford was home to Dame Agatha Christie and her archaeologist husband, Sir Max Mallaren, from 1934 until her death in 1976. Although the couple travelled the world, the 17th century home on the banks of the River Thames was their main residence for this period, and a blue plaque by the front door pays homage to the great novelist. The couple were buried in St Mary's Church graveyard in Cholsey, and a statue of Agatha Christie was installed on a bench in the Kynecroft Park in Wallingford in 2023 to celebrate her legacy. The elegant Grade II listed property remains in private ownership since it was sold by its international owners of two years in 2021 for a reported £2.75 million. It offers 4,190 square feet of living space across three floors, including a reception hall, three reception rooms, a study, a kitchen and breakfast room, principal bedroom suite and four other bedrooms. However, an application for listed building consent has revealed that the historic home is suffering from some decay, including to the main structural beam and the window lintels in the library. Historic wet rot has affected the window's lintel, which has begun to twist under the load from the beam above, and the end of the main beam with the timber becoming soft at the bearing point. The owner first noticed the issues when the floor of one of the bedrooms became bouncy. Works proposed include the replacement of the timber library window lintel with a concrete one, of a decayed sleeper joist with new solid oak, and the cementitious render on the outside of the building with a more historically appropriate lime render. The building's main beam will be retained in the works, but reinforced using a concealed stainless steel flitch plate to improve the structural capacity. Additionally, the historic brick garden wall will be repaired with approximately 200 defective bricks removed and replaced with matching wood-fired bricks, and the stone capping of the wall reset or replaced.
Russell Brand sells pub for £1 million ahead of his rape trial. Russell Brand has sold his historic Oxfordshire Country Pub for nearly £1 million ahead of the upcoming court trial for alleged rape. The comedian, set to face a rape trial later this year, purchased the Crown in Pizzle in 2020. He has twice applied to turn the 15th century pub into a recording studio for his online videos and podcasts, but was met with fierce resistance from the locals. The first plea was refused after more than 50 neighbours complained, and after more complaints were lodged about the second application, Mr. Brand withdrew it. The Henley Standard is now reporting that he has sold the pub to a local businessman for £975,000, which is about £125,000 more than he paid for it. Excuse me. The local paper reports that John Bloomer, Group Secretary of the National Farmers Union, is the new owner. Residents describe Mr. Bloomer as absolutely charming. Freddie Van Mierlo, the MP for Henley, told the paper, "I'm delighted for the residents who've had their pub closed for years by a celebrity for the purpose of recording self-promotion and conspiratorial YouTube content. I'm so pleased that this much-loved pub is back in good hands. I wish the new owners huge success, and I'm sure they'll be well supported by the community." Mr. Brand made his name as a comedian in the late 2000s and early 2010s, but has since reinvented himself as a podcaster and influencer. He will face trial over allegations of rape and sexual assault in October, and he has a home in the UK but now lives in the US, and is accused of three counts of rape, sexual assault, and an allegation of indecent assault. He denies all claims. Mr. Brand, Mr. Manvielo, and Mr. Bloomer were approached for comment. The number displayed on the pub's website is no longer operational. Fresh charges involving two new complaints were brought in January, and at a hearing in March, Mr. Justice Benathan agreed to delay the trial until October the 12th. The court heard the original trial was scheduled for up to 5 weeks, but is now expected to last for about 2 months. The judge said if Brand's trial started in mid-June, the court may run out of time to hear it and would struggle to find jurors who could sit through the start of the summer holidays.
Spiderbite hospital admissions double. Hospital admissions for spiderbites have doubled in England in the last decade, with Oxford experts blaming the rise on the explosion in the population of false widows. Provisional NHS figures show there were 100 admissions as a result of contact with or toxic effect of spiders in 2025, compared with 47 in 2015. A Freedom of Information request was revealed. Academics have linked the rise to the increase in the noble false widow spider, a species described as the most dangerous spider breeding in Britain, in a 2020 paper by Oxford University ecologist Clive Hambler. The species, which is known to bite, originates from Madeira and the Canary Isles and was first reported in southern England in 1879. Mr. Hambler, who is a lecturer in biological and human sciences at Hertford College, said, "The days when you could just treat spiders as benign in Britain are over. I think if you were going back 50 years, then there would have been hardly any consequences from spider bites in Britain," he said. "The incidence of severe bites from spiders in Britain will have increased as this species, false widows, became more hugely abundant in Britain, particularly in the south." There were 43 hospital admissions due to spider bites in 2021, and the figure increased to 95 the following year. the NHS figures show. In both 2023 and 2024, there were 91 admissions. Mr. Hambler said that people are coming into contact with false widow spiders much more often than they realise, adding that he has seen the species in the gardens of Buckingham Palace. He explained that the venom in the bites can cause pain and itching, but the more serious toxic effects are due to the bacteria carried by the spider, which he said can potentially lead to amputation, sepsis, and death. The academic said the species is much more willing to bite than many people are willing to admit, and that he suspects that many people per day are being bitten. Mr. Hambler said the public should be more aware of the risks that false widows pose without being alarmed.
An article about ticket list parking in the South and SODC. Ticket list parking is due to be introduced across all council operated car parks run by the Vale of Whitehorse and SODC. The councils have proposed that motorists will be required to register their vehicles using the machine, by phone, online, or via an app before parking. SODC plans to introduce a series of updates to car parks in towns including Tame and Wallingford under the new civil enforcement orders. The changes form part of SODC brackets enforcement off-street parking places, close brackets, order number 2026, which revokes the 2024 order currently in effect. As part of the proposals, all council pay and display car parks will move to a ticketless system, requiring vehicles to be registered at the payment machine by phone, online, or the app. 15 parking spaces will be lost in the Cattle Market car park in Tame to enable the development of a commercial property. Disabled spaces would be relocated to maintain the current provision. Other changes include extending the charging period to allow all-day parking at the Southern Road car park in Tame, which is currently short stay only. The order will also introduce a revised fee structure at two long-term car parks in Wallingford to offer what the council describes as more flexibility. Details of the proposed order and the council's rationale are available for public inspection at Abbey House in Abingdon between 9:30 and 12:30 on Monday to Fridays, not including bank holidays. If you wish to do that, please call Abingdon 01235 422 422 to make an appointment. Members of the public who wish to comment or object can do so by emailing technicalservices@southandvale.gov.uk using the consultation link on the website, or writing to the Technical Services Manager at Abbey House, Abbey Close, Abingdon. Comments must be submitted by midnight on Friday, May the 8th. All feedback will be considered by the Council's Cabinet before their decision is made. If approved, the new system will require vehicle registration upon your arrival. They're using the machine, the phone, or the app. This applies even during free periods or when a valid permit is required. Motorcycles and vehicles displaying a valid disabled badge will remain exempt. Additional administrative charges may apply, which include £16 for a replacement permit. Other recent notices across the area include changes to parking regulations in the Vale of Whitehorse, where the District Council is proposing similar updates. Documents will be available at Abbey House. Feedback must be received by midnight on May the 8th.
On the family announcements page, there is one. It's a death notice for Eileen Ansell, passed away on the 30th of March 2026, aged 88. Funeral service to be held at St Leonard's Church, Wallingford, on Tuesday the 5th of May at 11:30 a.m. Donations welcome to Alzheimer's Research and Sue Ryder. On this day. Birthdays. Marty Wilde, singer, is 87. Lord Geoffrey Archer, author and former politician, 86. Michael Tucci, actor, 80. Emma Thompson, actress, 67. Samantha Fox, former model and singer, 60. Ed O'Brien, rock guitarist for Radiohead, 58. Natalie Casey, actress, 46. And Seth Rogen, actor and writer, 44. And on this day in history, in 1452, Leonardo da Vinci, Italian painter, sculptor, architect, musician, engineer, scientist, and inventor, the complete Renaissance man, was born. In 1755, Dr. Samuel Johnson's dictionary was published, containing 40,000 words. In 1793, £5 notes were first issued by the Bank of England. In 1989, Britain's worst football disaster happened at Hillsborough, Sheffield, when 96 fans were crushed to death during an FA Cup semi-final between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest. And in 2010, before a live studio audience in Manchester and millions more watching at home, Gordon Brown, David Cameron and Nick Clegg clashed over the economy, defence and care for the elderly in Britain's first televised general election leaders' debate. And last year, the hundreds who died in the sinking of the Titanic were remembered during a service at Belfast. The annual service marked the 113th anniversary of the maritime disaster, which claimed more than 1,500 lives. And there's a photograph of Titanic heading this article.
Harris buzzing after firing Ewes to vital win. Oxford United striker Mark Harris was buzzing after scoring the crucial second goal to beat Watford. The striker came off the bench with just minutes remaining and won the ball in the visitors' half before firing emphatically past the Hornets' goalkeeper. Harris's goal secured a massive 3 points in the Ewes quest for championship survival after Miles Pearl-Hart Harris had put the host ahead of the first half. Huge, the Wales international emphasised after the game. Going off the two games we played over Easter as a team, we thought we should have had 6 points. We didn't lose the games. If you can't win, don't lose. Coming into this game, we knew how much of a big game it was, and we've gone out there, put a performance in and got the 3 points, and that's what we needed at the moment. Where we are in the league, last 10 minutes and still 1-0, anything can happen in the championships, but I thought we defended excellently from the front today. Will Lancashire, Jamie Donnelly, both wide men, all as a team, I thought they were excellent. It was nice to have a game where we were one up and just keeping them in their half, not just defending all game. To get the second goal was nice because then you can take a breather and see the 3 points over the line. Harris had a lot of time and space on the ball after winning it high up and was able to pick out the bottom corner in style. He explained, "To be honest, I thought I was a bit too wide, but once I got the second touch on the ball, I could just see the goal, so it was just hit it and hope. Get it across the face of the goal and hopefully it goes in," and it did so, Happy days. Today was brilliant and I'm buzzing. Hopefully now we can kick on, four more games, get as many points as we can, and let's see where it leaves us. The Welshman was also refreshing when asked if Portsmouth's late winner at Middlesbrough hurt to see. I'm not going to lie and say no, it doesn't, because it does, Harris admitted. They're down there with us and we want to be above the bottom three, so we are obviously going to look at results. But it's down to us to take care of our own job. If we keep on winning, we'll be fine. Oxford now sit 22nd in the league, 1 point from safety. Then the picture of the team of the week looks at 10 young people from the Radley Youth Under-11s, all sitting in the sunshine in bright lime green jerseys.
Okay, so that concludes our recording for this week. Remember to stay listening after this track for the monthly magazine articles. But thank you for listening to the weekly recording, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
And now from the Benson Bulletin, information about the Dorchester Festival. The biennial Dorchester on Thames Festival will be from the 1st to the 10th of May. And it is one of Oxfordshire's leading festivals, taking place over 10 action-packed spring days based in and around the stunning location of Dorchester Abbey. Since 2005, the festival has regularly attracted over 5,000 people each year, from serious followers of the arts to schools, families and children of all ages, and has raised significant profile and £350,000 for Dorchester Abbey and local charities. In 2026, we are partnering with local charity Be Free Young Carers. This wonderful charity enables Oxfordshire young carers to achieve their full potential by delivering a far-reaching developmental and emotional support network of people and resources in their daily lives, schools and communities. Highlights in 2026 include the King's Singers, Regent's Opera, Brian Bilston, the BBC Elstree Concert Band, the now legendary abseil down the Abbey's 100-foot tower, cookery and art workshops, poetry, comedy, folk and jazz nights, a gift and food fair, fun dog show, fun run and even a duck race. Details on the Dorchester Festival website. I'm now reading from the Benson Bulletin, and this is a report from the Benson Area Nature Group, and it's all about otters. February saw a packed house at the Millstream Centre for a talk about our new local celebrities, the otters. The audience was eager to hear about these elusive creatures and their gradual return to local waterways. Apparently, nothing excites more than the promise of otter footage and the chance to discuss animal poo in polite company. Otters had a rough time in the 1950s when pollution and hunting nearly wiped them out across England. But since the 1980s, they have made a remarkable comeback due to legal protections and cleaner rivers. Today, there are otters in every county in England, with a population estimated at over 11,000. These solitary animals weigh between 7 and 11 kilograms and require roughly a kilogram of food a day. Although mostly nocturnal, they have excellent eyesight and highly sensitive whiskers to detect prey. Fish, frogs and crayfish are favourites, but the occasional duck, moorhen or unlucky rabbit are also on the menu. They spend about two-thirds of their lives on land, where they can run at up to 15 miles an hour. After a nine-week pregnancy, a female produces a litter of 1 to 4 cubs that stay with her for about a year. The father, meanwhile, contributes nothing to childcare, though he may share territory with females, an arrangement that may ring true with some human parents. The first evidence of otters was the discovery of spraint, or otter droppings, along the brook. Gavin McLaughlin and Spencer Parker then installed trail cameras and checked Ring doorbell footage, confirming that otters are travelling from the Thames along the brook towards Ewelme. A plentiful supply of signal crayfish, an invasive species, seems to be keeping the otters well fed, potentially turning them into useful pest controllers.
We will be ending with a couple of items from My Vision's latest newsletter, My Vision being the what used to be the Oxfordshire Association for the Blind, which some of you will be familiar with, and news of upcoming events. Christchurch Cathedral Tour and Evensong. The date of that will be the 23rd of June from 3:45pm until 6:45pm at Christchurch College, St Aldate's, Oxford. It's free and a special opportunity to enjoy a guided tour and talk of the cathedral, followed by tea in the Priory Room and a beautiful evensong service with the choir. Spaces are limited, so if you are interested in joining, you need to contact info@myvision.org.uk. And the regular Wallingford social group will be meeting on Monday the 20th of April at the Wallingford Library from 10:30am until 12:30pm. This is a perfect opportunity to meet other visually impaired people, have some great conversations and enjoy some hot drinks and snacks. And they look forward to meeting you there. If you have any questions or concerns, please contact, again, info@myvision.org.uk or telephone 01865 725 595. That's 01865 725 595. And now a tech update from My Vision. What's new in assistive technology? Technology for people with sight loss is changing faster than ever. If you've wondered whether it's worth exploring something new or felt unsure where to start, here's a quick look at the trends we're seeing and what they might mean for you. AI, that's artificial intelligence, is now genuinely useful. The biggest shift is artificial intelligence moving from gimmick to everyday tool. Apps like Be My Eyes now include AI that can describe photos, read documents, and answer follow-up questions, all without calling a volunteer. You can photograph a tin, ask what it is, then ask, what are the cooking instructions? It's not perfect, but it's remarkably capable and completely free. The same AI is appearing in smartphones too. Recent iPhones and Google Pixel phones can now describe images within apps, even when developers haven't added proper descriptions. It fills gaps that would otherwise leave content inaccessible.
And continuing the same information, smart glasses have arrived. Ray-Ban Meta glasses look like ordinary sunglasses, cost around £300, and can describe your surroundings when you ask. They work with Be My Eyes for hands-free volunteer calls, and the look and tell feature has the glasses take a photo and tell you what's in it. Specialist options like Envision glasses offer more features, face recognition, detailed document reading, but cost significantly more. Key features of Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses and their accessibility benefits. Real-time audio feedback for enhanced awareness. The open-ear speakers integrated into the glasses deliver clear audio while ensuring the wearer remains aware of their surroundings. This is incredibly beneficial for utilising navigation apps, accessing audio description services, or even potentially identifying objects or scenes through integration with third-party apps. Because the sound is directed without blocking external noises, it promotes both information access and safety. Navigate with confidence. AI-powered visual assistance, now in the UK. One of the most exciting accessibility features is the AI-powered virtual assistants, which can describe the user's surroundings through audio feedback. Imagine being able to ask your glasses to tell me what's in front of me and receive a description of a street corner, a restaurant sign, or confirmation of a bus stop. While not intended as a replacement for essential tools like Guide Dog or Cane, this feature offers an invaluable extra layer of context and information when navigating unfamiliar environments. We're happy to note that this potentially life-changing feature is now available to users in the UK. Seamless communication with hands-free calling and messaging. Staying connected is made easier than ever with voice-activated calling and messaging through platforms like WhatsApp or Messenger. For many blind users, this hands-free approach reduces reliance on screen readers, allowing for more fluid and natural communication while on the move. Style meets accessibility, lightweight, comfortable, and discreet design. Historically, accessible technology has sometimes been associated with bulky or conspicuous designs. The Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses break this mould. Their lightweight construction and indistinguishable appearance from regular eyewear helps users feel more confident and included, ensuring that accessibility doesn't come at the cost of personal style. Hello to my April star, fellow vintage fan Jules Costello, whose lovely magpie brocante returns to the coaching barn in Little Stoke from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on Friday the 24th of April. You'll find lots of talented magpies under one roof, an amazing selection of vintage and decorative antiques from a variety of local and independent dealers, with free parking, fresh coffee and homemade cakes too. Follow at The Magpie Brocante for more. As you can hear, we're heralding art weeks in Round and About, so you can plan your days out. A mention for Ayers House Studios in Wallingford, whose free welcoming open studios between the 2nd and the 10th of May offer a rare opportunity to step inside the working studios and see work from more than 18 artists and makers. Visit the gallery and walled garden and experience creativity at close quarters. Practices at Ayers House span a wide range of disciplines, including ceramics, painting, textiles, drawing, photography, print, sculpture, jewellery, conservation, and more. Many of the resident artists work professionally on national and international projects, alongside teaching, commissions, and exhibitions. This year's Open Studios is a real snapshot of the energy and diversity within the studios, says Studio Coordinator Amy Hughes. Visitors will see artists at very different stages of making, from early experimentation to finished pieces, and have the chance to talk directly with the people behind the work. It's a great way to discover just how much creative activity is happening here. The studios will be open Thursday to Sunday, 10:30 to 4:30, and from 12 to 8 p.m. on Thursday and Friday. And you can look up Ayers House Studios website for more information. Saturday the 16th of May is the date of the next Cholsey Repair Cafe at Cholsey Pavilion. Doors will open from 10 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. and you can take along all manner of domestic items, including bicycles, for the expert attentions of our volunteer fixers, who will do their best to help you repair them. If the session is busy, you can make the wait more pleasant with a really good cuppa and cake from Cholsey Community Cafe, right next door. This is one of the region's longest-running and most respected repair cafes, and they have their own website for further information. This is from The Bridge, which is the magazine for Longwitnam and Clifton Hampden. And this is Soldiers of Oxfordshire Museum tells the story of the county's military heritage through 50 objects. And the exhibition lasts until the 30th of April. The exhibition combines highlights from the museum's permanent displays from the past 10 years, with recently donated items on show for the first time. The objects have been selected from the 14,500 items preserved in the collection of the SOFO Museum to give a glimpse into the story of Oxfordshire's military heritage. Oxfordshire's military story stretches back nearly 2,000 years from the earliest named soldier in the county, Lucius Valerius Geminus, a veteran of the 2nd Augustan Legion, who was buried at Alcester in 79 AD. The county's regiment plays roles in shaping the most significant conflicts of the last 200 years, from Waterloo to pivotal battles of the First and Second World Wars. Throughout history, Oxfordshire soldiers have led the charge at the forefront of world-changing events. A 19th century Shako cap and Waterloo medal highlight the 52nd Oxfordshire Regiment of Foot's role in Napoleon's defeat at the battle and encounter with his Imperial Guard. A signed sketch and set of binoculars are used to illustrate their descendants' famous role during D-Day 1944. 2nd Battalion Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry were some of the first British troops to land in Normandy, leading the capture of two vital bridges over the Orne River and Caen Canal in the early hours of the morning. The sketch of a Horsa glider, signed by the men who took part in the capture of what would become known as Pegasus Bridge, includes a note from one of the glider pilots, Staff Sergeant Walwork, who wrote, "On the 5th to 6th of June 1944, I carried the best troops, Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire, and engineers in both airborne divisions, but don't tell the others." The exhibition will include a collection of objects first uncovered by a French farmer in 2013, alongside the remains of an unidentified officer, scraps of a uniform, badges, buttons, a pocket watch, and a trench whistle provided some clues, which helped museum volunteers narrow down his identity to one of a small number of candidates, including Osmond Bartle Wordsworth, a collateral descendant of the famous poet William Wordsworth. However, it was a chance encounter with a visitor to the museum who knew another descendant that enabled DNA testing through the Ministry of Defence, Joint Casualty and Compassionate Centre, JCCC, which finally confirmed his identity.